This conference is being recorded.
Thank you.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Heart Start to Your Week, brought to you by Sierra on this Monday, April 28th, 2008. I'm actually quite excited for this call. I will say this, the invitations that went out for tonight's call, bringing the heart to life transitions to smooth them, make them easier, things like divorces, career transitions, empty nest. I got more responses to this invitation than any other invitation that's gone out, Brett.
Really?
Yeah. Well, earlier you and I were talking, and you know, you asked about, we have a guest tonight, a really special guest, which is partly why I'm so excited. Brett Askinas has been on our show once before to speak about his transition. There's another life transition, right, Brett, into a wheelchair, and how that turned out to be completely the opposite of what you thought it was going to be. You dreaded it, and it became this incredible portal to freedom where you thought it was going to be a prison. There's the irony, right?
For when I have to use it, yes, it's fantastic.
Yeah, such a beautiful perception shift, which is really one of the key things we teach people, especially in our beginner workshop, how to change their perception of things by looking at them quite literally through the eyes of the heart. And we're going to talk a little bit tonight about what the science behind that is, a place called the Institute of Heart Math that's been researching the physiology of stress and the physiology of feeling great, feeling good, and the integral role that the heart, the actual physical heart, plays in the pivot between those two, between stress or feeling good. And so at Sierra, which is a word that means feeling good, feeling, we defined it at one point as that great feeling you get when your arms fly up over your head and a yes to life flies out of your mouth. But it's not just that exuberance. Sierra can also be a deep sense of peace or well-being or calm or even compassion for self and other in a challenging time of suffering. So Sierra feels good in the sense that it's a great response to whatever's occurring, but it's also good for us. That's what HeartMath has been able to prove, because the feeling of Sierra creates a uniquely ordered pattern in the heart's rhythm. And because the heart is like the conductor of the orchestration that we are, it harmonizes all the instruments in our body, from our liver to our eyeballs to our ears to our nose to our toes, so that it's really good for our health, it's good for our perceptions, changes how we see reality, allows us to capture the bigger picture, the long-term view, respond more effectively. You know, they did a study of Yale graduates, and the single most important determinant of success in life was their ability to delay gratification, to be able to see the long-term view rather than look for the immediate gratification. And I think that's pivotal to tonight's topic, how to move through life transitions. Because immediately it can feel like your whole world is getting turned upside down. And yet being able to step back and have a much, you know, one of the opportunities inside a big life transition is it forces you into the heart perception of things, because myopically, if you're just hyper-focused on this one little snapshot, it can be too much of a crisis. It can be too tumultuous. But widening back and seeing things from the bigger picture, that's something that what we call heart intelligence can help you do. And then from the 50,000-foot view, you can get a better perspective on things. So the heart changes the way we look at things, which then, of course, changes how we respond to things. And that's not just a sweet metaphor. It's scientifically proven that because the ordered pattern in the heart changes the literal way the brain works, we just see different things in the same situations. And so we're going to apply that wisdom, a little bit of that science, and touch in on the topic of life transitions. And so as I was saying to you, Brett, the invitation that went out with this topic brought forth the strongest response I've ever received to a written Heart Start invitation.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, people inquiring about our programs. It really, something about what you shared and what you're going through and this whole topic is striking a chord with people. So we definitely will open up the call this evening for your input, your stories, your questions. We're going to ask you to *6 and mute out your phone here at the beginning of the call so that background noise doesn't interfere with what Brett has to share. And then towards the, you know, latter portion of the call, the latter half of the call, we'll again open up the line so you can share your own experience and ask your own questions. You know, we all go through life transitions in a lifetime, and the heart can definitely help. So I'm going to welcome back Brett and let you introduce yourself, Brett, and share a little bit about what inspired this topic for you.
Hi, my name is Brett Askinas. I'm a retired periodontist living in Fresno, California. Let's see, Jeff was talking to me a little bit about some of the things that how you know, HeartMath can be of use, and I shared with her a few of the things that I found to be of use in my life. And one of the things that kind of struck me was how when I retired from dentistry due to a physical ailment after being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, that I was really leery about losing my identity because of, well, essentially because it had been completely tied up in all of the things that went into becoming a periodontist. And, you know, many things in that regard. So that was a pretty daunting time for me. So I was given a number of wonderful gifts when I shared this with people, the fact that I was retiring. And I was rewarded. I was open to a lot of things. But I became more open to it as people shared with me their great concern for me and how I mattered to them more rather than just what I did. It wasn't what I did. It was who I was. And I thought that was just a beautiful metaphor for everything. And I get choked up just thinking about it now because of all of the wonderful support I received from people and continue to receive.
You know, it's interesting, Brett, because I got to know you while you were still in practice, right? And I remember one of the things we worked with in your coaching calls at the time was your dread of the day when you might have to quit. It was something you were resisting. Like, it was sort of one of the things on your checklist of not going to get that far, right?
That's absolutely true.
And it was like this impending doom for you. Like, I'm not going to go that direction on the flow chart ever, right?
That's right.
Because so much of your sense of value and self-worth came from being of service to people in the profession that you were in. And that was the one place, or you know, at the time where you really felt in the flow. It gave you that gift. And so when I checked in with you a couple years after we had, you know, been in our formal coaching relationship and you were past your retirement, I got to share in the surprise that you experienced yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you found that your value to these people was not what you did, but who you were. And I just want to shine a light on what you had said just now.
And, you know, and that, you know, the fact that you mentioned that, you know, thinking back to that time, going through all these physical symptoms and knowing that I needed to be in control or thinking I needed to be in control, you know, that was one of the ways that I was able to do that, by feeling, by being of service, by knowing that this was something that I could hang on to. And it was the only way I really felt useful.
And you know what's interesting? Because my heart just so bursts into compassion when I think back on those times that we spent where you were really in terror of having to face the possibility of giving up that profession and that identity because of your physical limitation. And I've at times even experienced things like that where I've been so violently, you know, ill with like food poisoning or something like that, where I literally can't get out of bed, so I have to cancel a day of teaching or something like that, right? And one of the beautiful things that I love so much about the HeartMath system and the HeartMath tools that we teach and that the Institute of HeartMath developed is I've gone into nursing homes where there are people who've had strokes, right? So we're talking physical debility far beyond anything you or I have had to deal with, Brett, who are actually paralyzed from head to toe, right?
Sure.
And they can't even speak because their mouths are paralyzed. So they're, you know, we have to devise ways of communicating with signals and that kind of thing, who find this incredible freedom in being able to realize that by sending heart, which is a tool we teach in the beginner course, the heart lock-in, they can still contribute. That even if all your physical wherewithal is taken from you, it's who you are at the core of your being that has value, not the roles and identities that who you are wears the costume of on the stage of life. And I thought that your invitation to people to this call explained that so beautifully. And it's poignant to me. You know, we always look for, in the intermediate courses, one of the things we teach people to do is transform things that seem like deficits in their life into assets. And I'm touched as I've listened to you introduce yourself today that, like, gosh, you know, if you had just, if you'd never become ill physically and you made it to a normal retirement, quote unquote, right, because of your age or whatever,
right,
I wonder if you ever would have gotten to have those conversations with all those people to discover that it wasn't your profession they valued, it was your essence.
I never would have had those discussions with people. I'm completely convinced of that. As I am, that I think on some level my symptoms have, and this change of career has, you know, led me to do what I should be doing. I mean, you know, that's the intuition. That's following my heart, quite literally.
Mm.
You know, my heart said, you know, okay, you'd be a periodontist, but now it changed. It said, okay, this is where it is. So, okay, well, let me know where I'm going so I can follow along.
Right, and in that new approach, right, following the GPS of your heart, which is something we talk about a lot in the courses, you don't always know what it's going to look like, right? When you're a periodontist, you know, okay, I have 4 years of this type of schooling and then this type of internship and then these are my student loan payments, and it's like very structured and clear and laid out in front of you, right? Is it like that for you? What was that?
Late gratification you were talking about earlier.
Uh-huh, right. So how do you deal with the discomfort of moving from that very structured type of vision to following your heart's intuition in your new way?
Well, what I did was I recognized that beating my head against the wall like I had done for so many years wasn't getting me anywhere, so I had to try a new approach. And it was completely comfortable for me to continue to beat my head against the wall because that's what I was familiar with and that's what I was good at. So it was a real paradigm shift to be able to say, okay, I need to do something entirely different.
Mm.
In order to try and get, you know, to do this differently. I knew that when I first came to you with the heart math tools, my goal was to do something to get out of my head, because I knew until I got out of my head, I was not going to get any better.
Mm.
And I was hoping.
Yeah, well, if you keep beating your head against the wall, no wonder you have so much energy stuck up there.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you keep plugging along. Because it had been so successful for me so
right.
many years, you know, the plugging along and working hard and doing things the way that I knew they should be done rather than how I felt they should be done. It was a healthy mix, I think, but I use my brain as much as I use my heart, mm-hmm. and now I use my brain after following where my heart's telling me to go.
Mm. Wow.
I use it as an addendum, as a tool, as opposed to giving it equal measure.
And how does that turn out for you when you do that? Because I can just feel people are listening like, what happens when you do that?
It always goes to the right place. It always does. And if it doesn't go to exactly where I want it to go at that particular time, I sit back and widen back, as you mentioned, and I say, okay, what's the big lesson here? What am I supposed to be learning here? Because if things are not going exactly as I expect them to, what am I supposed to be learning? And the great gift is being able to do that right in the middle of when something's not going exactly as you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that, if you can slow things down and be as present as you possibly can in that moment, you'll be able to say, okay, I see that there's a lesson here. I'm going to continue with this that is not so comfortable, and I'm going to ride it out, but I'm recognizing that my greater good is just to continue to flow through with this.
You know, I love that you pointed that out, because people ask us a lot, what makes heart muscle different from meditation or yoga or other things like that out there? And the answer partly to that question is you can do it on the spot in the middle of stress. You don't have to pull out your yoga mat on the traffic jam or, you know, those uncomfortable moments right there, right then. That's when your GPS of your heart comes online to guide you out of confusion.
And if you can recognize that that's the case and remember to do that, even when you're up in your head trying to solve whatever problem it is or dilemma you're having, that's when you know that things are going to be okay.
Yeah. That's really so great. So what would you recommend for someone? A lot of people listening to this call, in other words, are going through life transitions right now. I got letters from people who are facing empty nest syndrome. Their kids are getting ready to go to college. Or I also got a letter from a woman who is in a big career transition, right? So she's leaving the corporate world where she's been vigorously and successfully unhappy. So she's been, you know, really successful there, but really unhappy now. She's jumping off the precipice, and it's scary because she's starting her own company. So I got lots of letters from people who resonated with what you're talking about. What advice would you give them for stepping into this transition time?
I think one of the things that's most helpful would be to come to grips with the fact that you want to try and be comfortable in an area outside your normal comfort level. If you can be comfortable in any given situation, which I found that I had to, it was by force. You know, like, for instance, the woman who's facing the empty nest syndrome, I mean, that's not a typical, you know, she's used to having kids running around and driving them to wherever and having to deal with, you know, the daily grind of what it's like to have kids there. And now that something's not going on, she can, you know, paint or go to a yoga class or go take up archery or, you know, just do all of these things that, you know, that might turn her on, you know?
Okay, now I love that advice, and I can hear, I'm almost like, I feel like I'm plugged by telepathy into this group. I can hear people thinking, yes, but all my money and all my resources are going to pay for the kids' college education. So I have all this time on my hands that I've never had before and no resources.
Well, I think, you know, there are ways to achieve happiness that don't involve money.
Mm-hmm.
There, I mean, you know, once you get comfortable in your skin, maybe reading, maybe determining what it is that's going to, you know, if you have the ability to do some research and you follow your heart to do it, you'll be able to find a way that will be able to make it work.
So it keeps coming back to the same thing, following the GPS in your heart. Let's talk about that for a moment, because ultimately that's really what these life transitions open up the opportunity for. It's like you've been on a freeway that has no exits for decades when you wear an identity, like the owner of a company. I've worked with lots of people who founded companies and been very successful in them, and then they sell them and either successfully sell them or not. But still, either way, if it's a financial success or a financial failure, either way, no longer being the owner and the founder and the CEO of a company is a huge life transition, that loss of identity, right? That loss of daily identity. So here you are, whoever's listening to the call, whatever identity you might be giving up or letting go of, it's like you've been on this freeway for decades with no exit, and suddenly the freeway ends. And now you're at all these forks in the road, and you, for many years, you haven't had to decide which way to go because you were just on this autobahn, right? And it's jolting to the nervous system in some ways, and the emotions, to lose that emotional identity. With the heart, though, it's like you have a GPS in your car. And having some sense of vision to plug into your GPS so your heart can guide you, can help you, as Brett and I are discussing this whole concept of following your heart. So let's look at that. What does that mean, follow the GPS in your heart? Well, first of all, there's a brain in the heart. Science has discovered an intelligence, a nervous system with its own protein support cells, neurotransmitters, just like, not just like the brain in your head, but an intelligence like the brain in your brain that's constantly sending signals to the brain in your brain, but often stress or emotional distress creates static to that signal. So that's the first thing we have to do, is clear the static on the line. And that's what we teach people in the Beginner Heart Math webinar, how to de-stress their system by getting clear in the heart so that the GPS, the signals from the heart, can reach the brain. So if you get to the end of your freeway and you've got all these forks in the road and you go, I'm overwhelmed, I don't know what to do, and I don't have the resources to buy the gas to do it, then you've just scrambled your own signal, right? So that's step one, is being able to de-stress. Neutralize is what we call it, the negative effects of stress. And we teach that in the first night of the beginner course, which is happening Tuesday, May 6th. You can sign up for that on our website. And then what it really means, at least in the baby step beginnings, to follow that GPS in your heart, is exactly as Brett described it. It's just a shift in orientation where you're not figuring things out and then telling the heart how to feel about the choice you made. You're starting with appreciation. Whatever you can appreciate, we call that heart feeling, feelings that create order in the heart rhythm. That tunes the signal. It helps tune the heart signal to the brain. And there's a lot of talk about law of attraction out there. When you experience those heart-feeling, positive emotional states, you naturally start attracting what would be your next right step on your heart's blueprint. So you don't have to figure out which fork in the road to take. It takes you with it. Brett, I don't know if you have any specific stories or specific examples of where you followed the heart and then used the brain as a tool afterwards. I loved how you described that.
Well, let me. There was one thing I wanted to share with you at this point first, is about having. You mentioned about not having resources, and one of the things is having support, like, you know, such as, you know, the heart math tools and the heart math groups. And, you know, and good friends. And you brought up the law of attraction, and that's something that I think is, you know, there's some credence to that. I think at this particular juncture, you know, I get together with my friends, and my friends right now in my life are the best friends that I've ever had. I mean, these are people that I just are wonderful, and I use them as resources. And I talk to them, and I bounce ideas off of them, because so I'm not going through this alone. You had talked about, you know, what the CEO of a company had brought to mind, a friend of mine in Boston who I knew in college when I was going to college up there. And we've kept in sporadic touch over the years, but he got involved in computer programming and banking back in 1986, well before the computer boom. And he had a company where he employed 125 people, and about 3-4 years ago he sold his company for about $90-some-odd million. And I was like, so what are you going to do now? He's like, I don't know. So he became a philanthropist for a while, and then he decided that just wasn't doing it for him completely. So he started a new company where he could be more of where he was at this particular point than he was when he was doing this computer company. So it was more of a networking company. Mm-hmm. So, and I asked him about that. I said, why'd you do that? He goes, this represents more of what I've learned and what I have to offer now, more than I could be as a, you know, just doing straight philanthropy. And this will help me it helps me to stay engaged, and it also helps me to do what I feel like I need to be doing at this point. I just thought that was fabulous. He took where he was at this point and said, okay, I used to do that, but he wasn't tied to that. He wasn't tied to that identity. He was using what he had, you know, had taken from that, like the woman who's, you know, with the empty nest. I mean, all of these skills that she has from having years and years of kids at home, I mean, there has to be a use for those skills. And you just have to be open enough to be able to recognize what it is and maybe open enough to allow that to come to you.
I love what you're saying, Brett, because what I really hear in what you're saying is our fulfillment comes not from the roles and identities that we play, but from being the source of value.
Exactly.
And our value is intrinsic in the heart-based qualities we bring through us. And that changes as we grow. And so where our value can be offered at one phase of life would be different than another phase of life where we may have cultivated ourselves into a whole different caliber and texture of value that we're not even aware of. And we teach in the advanced course in depth, we teach people how to become the source of value. So not to identify with what's going on outside you, whatever that is, even in a role or an identity you play, but instead to focus your attention on the internal quality of life that you generate for yourself and others. That becomes the source of value, and that you can do no matter what your circumstances are offering you. Even if you're paralyzed in a nursing home, you still have value. Your value can come through your heart. So whatever role you're letting go of, the role does not equal your value. And in fact, chances are, if life is orchestrating itself such that you're no longer playing that role, it probably means that there are new roles for you to play where your new value can have greater impact.
Really true. Here, I'll give you an example. You asked about something
about specifics
following
your are great.
Heart and using your brain. Well, here's one that hits very close to home. I have felt for a long time now that where my value lies is being able to, and I found this in my periodontal practices, it was always very easy for me to communicate with people. I always, you know, listened to what they were telling me, and I said, okay, I am going to do what it is that you desire me to do. I'm going to do for you. I'm paying attention to what their priorities were so that I could best address them. And that was one of the things that patients and my staff always said that I did really, really well, is be able to cut right to it and take care of what the person wanted taken care of. Not what mattered to me, but what mattered to the patient. So I would go and I would, take care of these things. And right now I'm doing the same thing with myself. I feel like, since I have been involved in dentistry and in basically a service service industry, working with people, that at this particular point, I would like to do what I can with what I've learned through this journey to try and help as many people as I can. And I think one of the ways that I might do that, it just kind of struck me, is through writing, because I like writing, and it's fun for me to do. So when you called me and asked me to do this, my brain said, okay, here's an opportunity to work on, to force you to write, to do something to help people.
Mm.
So that was my brain basically saying, okay, your heart's doing this. Here's a perfect opportunity.
Take advantage of this.
So
in other words, participating in these Heart Start calls is your example.
it's an example, and it's helping me as much as it could possibly be helping somebody who's, hearing how I might have gone through it. Because, I don't mind doing the heavy lifting. That's my thing. I like doing work. I've always been the caretaker. So for me to be vulnerable and have to be taken care of, and in some regard was something for me to get used to. So this puts me closer to where I am in the wheelhouse, being of assistance as opposed to being assisted. This is where I'm more comfortable. So having had that experience, I think it's really nice that I can share it.
Yeah, well, I certainly appreciate you being willing to, Brett. Both calls you've participated in have been really rich and wonderful for me personally, and I think for all of our listeners. You mentioned something earlier that I also want to highlight because it touched me and I think it's important to shine a light on, which is the value of friendship and community as you go through transitions in life. Often I think where we are tied up in our sense of value and esteem and our roles, our friends, our family members, really, they value us for who we are at heart. And so having that kind of heart-based context to communicate with people, which is not common in modern society. You know, we're texting each other and driving around in our little metal bubbles. But we don't have much community, and I think that was a wonderful piece of advice you gave people, to seek reflection of who you are in the people you care about. It's one of the reasons we started here at Fiera, the Heart Mastery Program, and why we do these Heart Start calls, so that people can have a heart-based community, even if it's virtual, where they can be valued and appreciated for who they are at heart. As everyone in a, you know, a time of high-speed change all over the planet is going through rapid changes in their own lives and in their own roles.
It's of tremendous value to be able to take from, you know, some advice from, you know, some of your friends and see what they're going through. I'll, you know, perfect example earlier, I have a buddy of mine who's a dentist over in Carmel. I talk to him quite frequently about things, and it was from him that I got the idea that of because every time he was going through, he had just sold his practice in a town nearby here, had moved to Carmel, was looking to buy a house, couldn't, you know, everything was pretty much just everything at once. And when things didn't go exactly according to plan, he said, okay, what's my take-home message here? And he was able to do it right in the middle of it, right in the middle of everything where walls were tumbling down. And I was like, wow, that is just really powerful. And it's like, if he can do this when he's doing, he has about a million irons in the fire, there's no reason why I can't do it with everything else in my life.
It's true, right? You see other people responding to their changes, and it inspires and empowers what's possible for you. I've definitely seen that with our Heart Mastery Program, for those who are listening and don't know, is a year-long course. So everyone in that program is committed to learning about the heart and, most importantly, living from the heart for a year. And what that means is people bring their stories of their obstacles and their challenges, but also their successes in that process. And I love teaching it for precisely what you just said, Brett. Every time someone shares a success story, I get out there in traffic or, you know, in my dialogues with the IRS, and it reminds me, oh, yeah, we've got this power tool inside of us, built into who we are, that can literally burn through obstacles and alleviate stress and create magic wherever we go. I'd love to take a moment and just practicalize that from a scientific point of view by saying tonight's call is about transitions and the part of our body that's designed to respond to change is something called the autonomic nervous system. And if you look at any species, what determines the success, meaning the thriving of that species, is their adaptability to change. So one of the things that happens to us as we age, it's actually a biomarker for aging, is the nervous system gets less flexible. You think about puppy dogs, right? Or young children, when they get hyper and excited and then suddenly they lay down and they fall asleep. That's a very flexible nervous system, right? As we age, it gets harder to fall asleep and harder to get excited about stuff, right? So that's the loss of flexibility in the nervous system. It's harder for us to respond quickly to change. Well, one of the things that happens when you learn to create order in your heart rhythm is it increases your adaptability to change. It makes your nervous system more flexible, more pliable, so that when you go through career transitions or role changes, not only at the emotional level, but also at the physical level, you respond with more ease. You know, I mean, I've had people literally whose bodies just go into shakes or, you know, when their children are leaving or the body can interpret this role or identity shift as a physical death, you know, the fear of losing that identity. Or in a less extreme way, when I work with these CEOs, you know, they sit around and they're bored out of their minds. Boredom is a form of stress. Most people don't realize that, but it is. It produces many of the similar physiological characteristics in stress hormone levels and heart rhythm patterns and brain function as high anxiety. So boredom is a form of stress. And you look at these people who give up their companies after a while, and they're used to, you know, being on the ball and using their skills to be of value. It keeps coming back to that for me tonight with you, Brett. Really just making me aware that the antidote to challenging career changes or life transitions is really continuing to anchor your value in some way.
I'd like to touch on something else that you had brought up earlier, too, about,
please, yeah,
about friendship. And I think there's tremendous value in being around like-minded people. You know, it's I've done my level best. In fact, I don't want to admit this, but why accept it? But I have avoided like a plague all of the MS groups. Because they tend to be filled with, and again, generalization on my part, I don't know because I haven't been with them. I've met a number of wonderful people who unfortunately have the same affliction, but I've met them in places where their attitude is great and they're trying to do the same things I am, but I've done my level best to avoid the doom and gloomers because they are not going to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and be around like-minded people and people who are trying to get better and are trying to, and it's, you know, trying to do the best they can for themselves. You know, and amongst your friends, I mean, you can see this. If you widen back and look at it, you'll say, okay, you know, some friendships, you know, friendships have you know, they can be, you know, a little like roller coasters. You know, sometimes they have highs and lows. The friendships that are nourishing are the ones that I try and keep. That's why I say my friends are the best they've ever been. The people who I don't resonate with, I find myself rather deliberately or not deliberately, you know, involuntarily just avoiding, staying away from, not keeping up with. And I think that has been very helpful because I haven't, you know, because they're just like, oh, you can't do this or oh, you can't do that. It's like, you know, I have no room in my life for that. Life's too short and I don't need it. So I think, you know, keeping in touch with the type of people that you want to be with and the friends that you have been wonderful support, there's nothing greater.
I really love it that you're sharing that and you're bringing in another facet with that I think is valuable for people as they go through life transitions or really as they just go through the normal day-to-day stress of life, which is really looking out for what boosts your energy and what creates energy drains. Often, you know, people will come to me and they're in heavy debate over whether to join the Heart Mastery Program and make that financial commitment. And ultimately, what people often come to is, okay, well, this may be a little bit of money out of my bank account each month, but the energy gain that I get from being surrounded by this like-minded, positive, daily reinforcement an environment of people that are going for it and creating their life passionately, that'll give me the energy I need to make the extra money. You know, it's exactly what you're saying. And we do financial accounting in our lives. But what I hear, Brett, is that this physical challenge drove you to a place of getting to the more essence level accountability, which is for your own energy, and realizing that you don't have the energy to waste anymore.
Right.
And that's a tremendous benefit because the truth is none of us have that energy to waste. So if you can become acutely aware of where you're draining your vitality, because that's what stress does.
I received a lesson on this during my practice because as time went on and I started to have some weakness in my, you know, some weakness in my arms, but nothing that was prevented me from working, I became incredibly efficient at doing what I needed to do. And it was remarkable to me how much energy and time I wasted early on in my practice before I got to the point where I was just incredibly efficient.
Mm.
And I took that point, you know, it's like I can do all of these same things and I don't need to spin my wheels. I can just do them.
I love that. And efficiency is the key to heart coherence. The heart intelligence is one facet of it that is you even have tools that lead you to learn how to tap into your heart's GPS, and the destination you program it for is the most efficient choice. We even use that word.
And do you know what leads to, well, you know, but for me, the word that resonates with me and leads to that, that's the precursor to efficiency is clarity.
Yeah. Mm.
You have to be, if you're clear, you're free of all of these things that you mentioned, all these stressors, all of these things that are creating the noise, creating the buzz in your field. If you're free of those, then you're going to be able to be as efficient as possible.
And again, if you don't, if you're not free of those and you're listening to the call and you've got the buzz brain going on, you don't want to use that to beat yourself up. It's standard these days. And there's an antidote to it, and the antidote to it is a shift to the heart. We even have a biofeedback technology you can use that helps you tune your signal so you get coherent again and quiet that static. So there is a way out. That's really the hope and the promise of this call.
Another word that I think is important that you use quite frequently in heart math is recognition. You know, recognize the heart. That's how you start. Recognize the heart.
Mm.
Well, if you can, like I said, widen back and recognize when you're in a place where you're not completely clear, where you don't have the clarity, where if you can recognize the noise that's there, that's the first step to being able to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. That's brilliantly said. Thank you. That's it, exactly. Just even the awareness is a great first step. And big life transitions can make us more aware of things that are there all the time. They can make us more alive. They can actually bring the gift of feeling life more poignantly, experiencing life more fully, because we're not tied up with our recognition of attention on roles. So it frees us up to be more of who we really are. Brett, I just love riffing with you. I feel like you and I could go on all night, and I want to open up the lines in case anyone has, you know, specific questions for you or stories of their own they want to share. So if everyone would just press *6 to unmute, then we really welcome any of your specific questions or stories of your own. If nobody has anything, then Brett, you and I can just keep trembling along.
Okay. That'd be fine with me.
Yeah, I'm so enjoying your perspective on all of this. So I'm curious, for you, at what point did you know you had to make that shift? Because as we talked about, it was something you dreaded originally. So how did you assess? Because there are people who, you know, they've got one foot on one barrel and another foot on the other, and the barrels are splitting, and they're, you know, rapidly becoming ballerinas because they're getting stretched.
I think I've always known it. I think I've always knew that I needed to make that transition to being able to just be, okay, I'll think back to a time when I was, and I think I might have even discussed in the last call, the time of being happy-go-lucky. You know, this whole concept, I remember the concept of about age 12 of, you know, somebody said, oh, they're happy-go-lucky. And, you know, I kind of had an idea what that meant. I said, you know, that sounds like a really great thing to be. But I can't be any further from that because I'm a stress case. And I knew that intrinsically. And I knew that if getting to that place was going to be very beneficial, very helpful. So I think a lot of this was just recognizing all the things that had been there all along. Just being able to clear out all of the cobwebs and be able to say, okay, I knew I needed to get out of my head. And when I first came to you, I was like, okay, I need a mechanism to get out of my head. And for me, you know, I knew that's what had to happen. And if it didn't happen, I knew I wasn't going to get any better. So I just...
You know, I'm sitting here chuckling because I love what you did with my question. And you addressed something that I think is pertinent to everyone listening, which is the real life transition is not a career transition. It's not a divorce. It's not these external situations changing, you know, emptiness. It's the transition from the head being the human operating system to the heart being the human operating system. That is the life transition that we as a culture and as a species are going through. So when I asked you, I was really asking about, you know, giving up periodontal, your periodontal practice And you took it right away to the heart of what it really is, which is living from the heart rather than figuring everything out. That was so beautiful.
It was just another step. You know, basically, it was just another step in that whole continuum of knowing that I needed to get free of the things that were clogging me from getting to where I needed to go, wherever that might have to be.
I love that. Yeah, that's so clear.
Sheva?
Yes.
Hi, it's Kimberly Johnson.
Hey, Kimberly, welcome. Nice to hear your voice. We haven't heard from you in a while.
I know, and I actually missed the first 15 minutes of the call, and so...
Well, it's been recorded, and it will be uploaded. Actually, this is a good moment, Kimberly, if you don't mind, if I just interject. For those listening to us new, all these calls are recorded and archived at Sierra.com. S like fantastic, Y-E-R-A.com. You can look for the Heart Start page or just go to Sierra.com/heartstart.html. And we've got, dozens and dozens of these calls now up there on different topics. So help yourselves. You can download them right into your iPod. And we love to just have that out there, bringing people more heart, bringing the world more heart. So good to hear from you, Kimberly. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm not quite sure of a question here. I'm fitting into a number of the categories that you're discussing because I also was diagnosed with MS about 5 years ago and just about ready to send my first child off to college. So I'm not an empty nester, but everything's shifting for me. And though I have a successful executive coaching practice, I guess my question, and I'm sorry, what's the name of your guest?
The guest names is, you go ahead, Brett.
Brett. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Kimberly.
Hi. I really appreciate listening to your enthusiasm. And I, too, have tried to stay on the sort of not identifying with the negative aspects of the disease and such. And I guess what I'm wondering is have you noticed both physical and obviously emotional changes for yourself? Have you noticed physical changes or been able to support yourself more physically from the heart work as well? Or has it been more on the sort of mental, emotional level?
It's been everything.
Uh-huh.
I think more emotionally than anything else. I feel like I'm in a really good place emotionally. From the physical aspect of things, another thing that kind of one of these kind of buzzwords in my heart, I knew that the less the physical mattered, the more freedom I would have.
Mm. Uh-huh. Oh, will you say that again? That's so cool.
The less the physical problems mattered, the less problems I would have. The less they would be a concern. They tend to disappear as I tend to focus on other things. So I'm replacing being bummed out about having numbness in a particular area with being excited about the prospect of writing or the prospect of taking my dog for a walk in the wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. So I'm just replacing, you know, shall we say, calluses with, like, new pink skin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Thank you. It's really inspiring to hear you so filled with just excitement and and life. And are you actually wheelchair bound?
No, I use it to go any long distance. I use a cane and walls and counters in my house to get around. But if I need to go anywhere with any distance, I get out in my wheelchair and I've gone around the neighborhood with it and I put it in the car and wheel myself around to different places. So it's been a great benefit to be able to go places that I wouldn't be able to go without a great deal of energy.
Uh-huh.
And Kimberly, if you haven't listened to the call that Brett did about that, about the transition to the wheelchair.
Right.
I really recommend. I know we have a couple people on the call tonight with MS, so I love it that the conversation is also headed in a direction to deal with that directly, and I welcome those questions and encourage them. And I also encourage all of you to listen to Brett's story about the transition to the wheelchair, because it really is another life transition that he talked about, one in which, you know, what he thought was going to be a horrible thing became this fantastic thing. So, you know, for all of you that are faced with that potential, which is in truth all of us,
yeah,
you'd be amazed. You know, I work with 17-year-olds who become quadriplegics because their surfboard hits their neck, you know.
Yeah, I wanted to address one other thing for by using the wheelchair, I found that, and I knew this as well, this is another intrinsic thing that I just knew, that if I had more energy to do other things, then rather than beating my head against the wall, like by just walking and being stubborn, then of course I try and walk to it so I can do as much as I can, but I allow the wheelchair to do its thing so that I have energy to do things that are more pertinent to what I need to do at that juncture or whatever that might be.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that which comes back to what we've been saying. It's like, where's the real value? So it's not about proving yourself in this role of I am a healthy person that can walk, right?
It has been for a long time. So
right.
It's not something that came overnight.
No, and that's really the point that we also want to communicate. You know, this is Brett's enthusiasm, his vitality, his energy, his passion has come from the heart work he's done with HeartMath and with other tools like things like Avatar. And do you want to give people a resource list of things that have helped you, Brett?
Sure. I have to think of all the things. Like right now, I just got through with, I had a Rolfer who basically went in and, you know, I've had many sessions of Rolfing and traumatic growth. They should really have tried acupuncture. I've tried pretty much everything. So I've gone to a very extensive list of alternative means. And I personally, and I wouldn't recommend this for anybody unless you check with your doctor, but I personally have stopped taking medications because that was my choice. That was something that I felt I needed to do for the opportunity to try and get better. So I use all alternative type of medications.
Well, the thing that you bring up here, Brett, which is really valuable too, is like there's so many options out there for self-help study and for alternative medicine and regular medicine. How we navigate those decisions to assess what's really best for us and our health and our well-being, I find the HeartMath tools invaluable for that, because meaning like immeasurably valuable, because what's right for one person may not necessarily be right for another. And being able to have a GPS inside you that you can program for your health and your well-being and then follow.
That's an excellent point. Can I say something else on that?
Yeah, please.
I was doing some pranic healing, which is healing basically from the Philippines, and I like that. But what I've done is if it doesn't feel right to me at that time, I'd stop doing it. I've stopped doing it because it just didn't feel like it was nourishing me the way it needed to at that point.
Mm.
So I very much put everything into my heart and see where it is, and I look at my calendar and say, okay, where do I need to go to do this? Does this feel good? Does this feel right? And I allow my intuition to dictate where I go, you know, using my head to, you know, determine what it is that, how it is that I'm going to do it. But I allow my intuition and my heart to dictate what it is that feels right to me, and I follow it.
Mm. So beautiful. Gosh, you know, Brett, I wish we had a recording of your first coaching call with me, like a before and after snapshot. It's almost like listening to a completely different person share.
I was, at that point, I can tell you the things that were coming about were frustration and cynicism and just being bummed out.
Yeah, it's really just so remarkable who you have allowed yourself to become under the, you know, the diamond you've chosen to be under the pressure of your challenge. It's beautiful. Such an inspiration. Does anybody else have any question or anything else they want to share with Brett before we close up for the night?
I do, Sheva. It's Val.
Hey, Val. Thanks for
Hi.
Being here.
Oh, thank you. Brett,
yes.
I'm really looking forward to hearing your first call and hearing about your transition to the wheelchair. I've been diagnosed with MS for over 25 years, and I have had the relapse remission kind, and mostly in remission with a few kind of bizarre exacerbations over the years, but mostly I would just recover and go back to pretty much normal. But in the last few years, they tell me that I've shifted to secondary progression, and I'm needing to rely on a cane some of the time. I take it with me now all the time, but I had such resistance to that because I have had this conflict between wanting to be normal and acting as if I was normal. And yet, when I bring the cane, I don't know if you've noticed this, people are so much kinder. It really helps with navigating in the world because people, I think when I'm stumbling along and not moving well, they don't have any tolerance for that. They probably think I'm drunk or something.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, but with the cane, there's a lot of compassion. So that's helping me to embrace a little bit more that I really do need this. But I'm really anxious to hear how you went to the wheelchair because that's probably where I'm going. And
because
I can't walk more than a block. So I think I'd have more freedom.
Yes, but Val, you should just share with the group where I met you.
Oh, yeah. I met Sheva at Curves.
Working out.
The difference between Sheva and me?
No, is, no.
Well, no, I'm happy just to go from machine to machine. I just bop to the music a little. Sheva is so amazing. She uses this word weightless. She is. She just dances like she's like a marionette. It just flies around. It is such a delight just to be in her presence in that environment. So,
thank you.
Yeah, even though my own heart is heavy because I'm not able to do that. And,
I think this is such a poignant way for us to start bringing this call to a close is, of course, every time I see Val walk into Curves, it makes my day, right? Because I have this heart connection with her. So it's not that my body is a dancer's body that bops around like a marionette weightless that is the source of that experience for us because I get the same thing. So there's Val with her cane doing what she does at Curves, and there's me bouncing around. Now I'm giving myself away, right? That's where I go to have fun and dance off the day.
Yeah,
and,
dreams.
And yet the real value for both of us is that heart connection that we have, and all of us are valuable in the heart. So I am so glad you came tonight to the call, Val, and I encourage you definitely and the others to listen to the previous call about the about Brett's transition or experience of adding the benefit of the wheelchair into his routine.
Can I add something for a second?
Yeah, please.
Val, you'd mentioned that you thought you see her dance around like a marionette and whatnot. And, you know, I have to say this. Never once have I ever been jealous of somebody for being able to do something that I couldn't do because I felt like this is my journey, this is my deal, and I'm going to do the very best I can with it, and God bless from there.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I never once have felt jealous of somebody. That's like, good for them. Let them, you know, because that's their thing. This is your thing, you know, and you may not like it at this point, but it's, you know, I firmly believe there's a grand scheme of things, and you know, and that's one of my core beliefs, and I think that this is making me a better person.
Well,
you know, we all have our struggles.
Thank you for that. Have you have had any challenges with depression?
I've never been depressed. Did I stay? Engaged, and I visit with my friends a lot, and I try and do all the stuff that I can. I mean, I get bummed out a little bit, but I wouldn't call it depression.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's ever gotten to that point.
Oh, that's very good.
You know, and I'll tell you why, because this is a very good and very interesting thing. Every time I feel like I'm going to get depressed, I look for something not to be depressed about, and I always find it. Always.
Yeah, it's really a battle of the mind, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You can get very bummed out. It's like, why am I walking like this? Why am I have to visit this wall? Okay.
What I'm talking about is not a reactive depression to my situation. I don't get depressed about that so much. A little envy, you know, or a little sorrow about what I've lost, but that's very minimal. I'm talking about clinical depression and something that is sometimes, for some people, a MS symptom.
I understand that.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you don't have that.
Yeah,
that's another thing I struggle with.
You know, I'll be honest. I've never had any vision problems. I've had any cognitive problems. So I feel very blessed in that I've been able to, you know, not get hit as hard as some people have.
Yeah, it's so amorphous, isn't it?
And let me dive in here for 1 second and just say one of the services we provide here at Sierra is we actually do physiological lab testing for people who are struggling with clinical anxiety and depression. So we're able, with a test kit that you can do from the comfort of your own bathroom, and you just pop it in the mail or leave it for your postal carrier to pick up, believe it or not, with a little saliva and a little urine, you spit in a cup and pee in a tube, or maybe it's the other way around, we can actually track your stress hormone levels, your anti-aging hormone levels, as well as 7 neurotransmitters that contribute to mood disorders.
Ooh,
so
awesome.
That we can target specific what's going on in there. And, of course, that's what the HeartMath tools are principally designed to address, is ending the stress of anxiety, depression, and other forms of stress from the inside out by adjusting your heart rhythms and helping you balance your overall physiology that way. So,
hallelujah.
While we would never, you know, claim to step on the toes of your psychiatrist or your physician, you always want to be working in conjunction and harmony with them, we do have very practical and tangible ways to both diagnose, assess, and help you work with the stress of those conditions.
Well, it sounds really complimentary, which is...
Yeah, absolutely. So if anybody has questions about those lab tests or other services, you can reach us directly here at Sierra at 310-581-1507. I'll say that again, 310-581-1507. Or you can email me, Sheva, S like Sam, H, E, V like Victory, A, at Sierra, S like Fantastic, Y, E-R-A, .com, Sheva at Sierra, .com. We have a beginner class starting on Tuesday, May 6th, and you can register for that on the website, or you can call or email. And if you want more information, too, about our year-long Heart Mastery Program, where you can be a part of that heart-based community, surround yourself with, attract more of that heart-focused, positive, passionate way of living and confronting challenges, we are happy to provide you with more information on that, too. Brett, I have to teach a webinar, actually, for our advanced course curriculum in 5 minutes.
Right.
So is there anything else you want to leave our listeners with tonight? We're definitely going to have you back. I'm so glad you're willing to do that.
Well, I just want to say one more thing to Val. I wanted to say that personally, and this is how I feel, I would not trade symptoms. I would not trade problems with anyone.
I hear you.
This is my thing, and I'll get through it as best I can. God bless if I can, help a few people along the way with what I'm going through, then even better.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that, Brett. And it's one of the things we talk about in our courses. We call it a you with you game. Stress is not the circumstances. It's not having what someone else has. You never know what someone else has going on in their world, their challenges, the things they're meeting. It's all about who you are in the face of whatever's come your way and the power to choose consciously who you can be, to be the value you want to see, as Gandhi would say. Well, that comes from, or at least can be tapped into, through the heart. And it's my great joy to be a pointer to that in you. So please do call on us if we can be a further resource. Brett, I'm definitely going to call on you to do more of these. Thank you. It's just always so rich when you're here. We keep going and going. It's wonderful. Thank you all for joining us tonight, and feel free to call or email your questions. We'll meet you back here next week. It's going to be a really fun Heart Start call. I hope you can come as a participant next time, Brett. We're going to have a stand-up comedian here.
Oh, fantastic.
And we're going to talk about how humor is a gateway to the heart and to dispersing stress.
Can't miss that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. All right, everyone. Have a great night.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.